But at least people also are starting to look at the budget now. Remember, the budget is not separated from the government. It is an integral part of the of government, and the politicians that you vote for are the guys that decide about the budget. Make it part of mainstream political debate, the budget. Where's the money coming from, and where is the money going to? And it's our decision on that in the end. Ask more questions about the budget and read more about what the various political parties stand for when it comes to the budget. Don't let them talk a lot of bullshit about they're going to create jobs and do this and that. That's nonsense. Ask them about the budget. What are you going to do with my money? Are you going to spend it wisely? And where are you going to take the taxes from? Tell me, and tell me why. Those are the questions that we need to ask our political leaders.
And so what should we be asking Enoch Godrandwana when he stands up next Wednesday and he has his mini budget? What should we be thinking of anyway that he's going to tell us, whether it's lies or truth?
It's more for the budget next year, but the questions are still the same. You must ask the questions. You must ask them, where's the money coming from? Is it fair? Is it efficient? Do you do this in a cost efficient manner? The way where you're getting the money from, the various taxes. Tell me where the various taxes are coming from. Should we overhaul the system? Is that the best that we can do in the way, by way of funding this state? Ask those questions. And very importantly, what are you doing with my money? Where's the money going to? Is it spent efficiently? Are you handing out contracts to the most effective and the best contract value for money for the taxes that I pay to you? Are the civil servants paid for what they're worth to me because they work for me in the end? Do we need all these cabinet ministers, or can we do with fewer because I fund them? Do we need the ministers to drive around in these black cars with the blue lights and assaulting people next to the road because that is done with my money in the end? Those are the questions that we need to ask. And don't let them off the hook. Let them answer those questions. And when a political party comes around next time, and when they've got these political manifestos, go through the manifesto and see if you can get the answer to these questions in the manifestos. Where are they going to get the money? Is it fair? Where's the money go to, and are they spending that efficiently or not? Get the politicians to answer those questions.
So if you take a different view, if you take a view that, yeah, Darby's smoking something very strong and he's never going to get rid of the ANC and we're still going to have the socialists running South Africa, what do you then do as a member, a rational member of the public?
There are many opportunities, despite the damage done by the political elite. There are many opportunities still in South Africa. One is that one authority, and I mean, I just keep on beating this drum, and that's the Reserve Fund. They've done a brilliant job in getting inflation lower. So there's an investment opportunity. Look at the capital market and the equity markets. Those are the kind of returns. They are very, very good. Something else, and I spoke about this at the conference as well. Economic activities today happens in the cloud. Politicians have much less control over us than previously. Because make sure you've got the necessary skills and a good internet connection and a good computer, and you can be part of a modern economy, even if you live in a country that's badly managed like South Africa. So there are opportunities. But apart from that, there are, even in the real economy, there are certain sectors in the economy that I think are really offering amazing opportunities, despite the fact that politicians are going out of their way to undermine that. Agriculture is a sector that I think is doing absolutely brilliant. But you must have special skills and technology and capital, of course. Not the way that politicians are approaching agriculture. Education is another example of that. There are so many opportunities, investment opportunities in education and many of the other ones in finance. And again, it's one part of that service industry. Finance offers so many opportunities. And then other very technologically driven things. Like artificial intelligence, drone pilots, various things in genetics or various other levels of medicine and new kinds of monies, stable coins. Those are all the opportunities that are available basically to everybody, including to us South Africans.
So the point is, don't get stuck in this ideology of a party, which, as you said at the conference, is back in the 1920s, what might have worked then 100 years ago. But actually have a look at the way the world has changed. See the world as it is, not as some people want it to be. And there are massive opportunities for you as an individual, as a human being, to take advantage of this.
Yeah, and government, like I've said, they are part of the problem. So the best way to handle this in the short term, of course, you have to make it your responsibility to get the right political leaders. But the best way to manage this in the short term is simply ignore them as much as you possibly can. Just stay out of their way as much as you possibly can, because they're damaging things. And it's possible to do that. I mean, you and I, we don't need permission from any politician to talk to one another. We can talk to one another. This is part of the service industry. And there are so many other things that can be done as well. So try to, as Pete LaRue says, try to create a state-proof business that protects you from the damage that the state can cause.
And that keeps you optimistic.
That keeps me optimistic. I'm very, very optimistic about, well, all you need to do, Alec, going back 10 years, go back 30 years, go back 100 or 1,000 years and see how much progress we've made. Today, we've never had it so good. Of course, it's not always a straight line. It's going up and down. But the general trend is up. I think we are entering a period of amazing abundance of just about everything. Things are getting cheaper and cheaper. And I've spoken about this at the conference as well. And the only things that are getting more expensive are very, very special skills in the service industry. Those things are getting more expensive. Working for somebody else, even people, educators, their skills are getting more expensive. A specialist in the medical field are getting more expensive.
Yeah, you know, I've got to say that after 26 years in the National Prosecuting Authority and 12 years in Parliament, there's nothing that has been mentioned that has shocked me even mildly. Nothing is shocking. I understand that it's shocking for people who don't deal with it every day. But the fact that, you know, the top echelon of the South African Police Service are either lame ducks or quite possibly corrupt is a problem. It's a serious problem. And unfortunately, we know that it's not limited to the top echelons of the South African Police Service. And again, I want to stress that that doesn't suggest that all policemen are corrupt. That's not the case. Or that all members of the judiciary are corrupt. That is definitely not the case. Or that all prosecutors are corrupt. That is not the case. But that all of those institutions appear to, in some degree or another, to have, problems that need to be dealt with. That is so. Yeah.
And the NPA, where's it been in all of this? Surely this is its remit to sort this out or address it at least?
Well, the NPA's remit was to sort this out a long time ago. So they haven't done that. They've been spectacularly absent over the last 15 or so years. The rot started with Menzies Simelane being appointed as the national director, and it was downhill from there. And no matter how much we tried to shine the light on that, it didn't help. The NPA was thoroughly captured in the Zuma years. So the top management of the NPA was thoroughly captured in the Zuma years, and it's going to take a long time to recover from that. Shamila Botoya, I think, has done her very best to do that, to clean up. How successful she's been is debatable. I don't necessarily think it's for lack of trying. And that has had a catastrophic effect on the ability of the organization to prosecute grand corruption, organized crime, and those types of offenses, racketeering. I can't think of one big organized crime or corruption matter that has been successfully prosecuted in the last 10 years, which is a terrible thing to have to say.
So it appears as though things only happen in our country when the public puts its attention on it. And right now, the public's attention is very, very much on this subject, Are you, when Mkhwanazi first came out, you were pretty critical of the way he went about it. Having seen the consequences of this, are you now feeling more comfortable that maybe he didn't have another way to go?
I don't think that I was critical. I'm an old prosecutor. I never accept things at face value. I always look behind the facade. That is what my experience has taught me to do, and that's what I did with General Mkhwanazi. So I still hold the view that to appear on a Sunday afternoon on national television dressed in full battle fatigues of the task force, surrounded by people in the same uniform, all armed with automatic rifles, wearing face masks and balaclavas, I think that was something of a statement, and I'm not entirely sure that that was the only or the best or the necessary way to go. If that's the way he chose to go, that's his prerogative. I question it. And I question what the message was. I was unfortunately not here at the ad hoc committee when he testified. I was at the Judicial Services Commission. But I do think that there were other options. And I don't necessarily accept that General Mkhwanazi or anybody else, for that matter, is a knight on a white horse. Everybody looks out for their own best interests, and it's my view that this is no different. This is not a totally altruistic, I have the best interests of South Africa at heart revelation. I don't believe that. And we'll get to what was behind it eventually. So I'm not critical of him. He did what he thought he had to do. I think it was unnecessarily alarmist. But they've now tried to portray the fact that they came to the portfolio committee and they've tried to blame the portfolio committee for not acting. We've seen what they presented to the portfolio committee, and it was none of the stuff that Mkhwanazi mentioned on that Sunday afternoon. So they didn't use that avenue.
So what conclusions can we, the public, draw so far, given that everybody in South Africa has got an opinion on everything, it seems, from the Springboks and certainly through to Mkhwanazi? What, from what you've seen, should we be actually basing our thoughts on?
Well, this is a golden opportunity to shine a light on endemic corruption in the criminal justice system. It's been necessary for a long time, and this is sort of the abscess that has now burst. So we have this opportunity. We must seize it and use it and to make sure that we make it count. So no matter how much obfuscation there is in the committee, the members will be able to draw their own conclusions from, the evidence presented, comparing notes and looking behind the facade. And we will come up with, I'm quite sure, very concrete and insightful recommendations. And I think everybody on the committee is quite determined to see them implemented. So at the end of all this, we will be able to reach, I think, conclusions. And we will certainly spend a lot of energy making sure that the recommendations are implemented. And in the oversight of these departments reporting to portfolio committees, next year. So, this process will be finalized this year, and we'll start next year with putting the boot in and making sure that these ills are addressed. So that's a very positive outcome. What South Africans should really bear in mind is that everybody in the police service and everybody in the National Prosecuting Authority and everybody in the judiciary, whether it be judges or magistrates, are under-resourced in the extreme, overstretched to breaking point, and that makes them less effective and efficient than we would like them to be, no doubt. And South Africans should be aware of the fact that all of these, the entire criminal justice system, is starved of budget, utterly starved of budget, and that's by design. And the design is, of course, to ensure that endemic corruption can continue to flourish, and that these people can operate with impunity. Because that suits the agenda. So South Africans should be aware of that. When they complain about poor service from the police, understand they have no budget. When they see prosecution's failing, I understand. They have no budget. And when judges take a long time to deliver judgments, I understand. They have no support. They have no administrative support. They work in buildings that are decrepit. The entire criminal justice system is under-resourced and under-budgeted.
Bob Hertzog continues to say South Africa is uninvestable. You have been beating the offshore drum, but tentatively saying, hang on, you know, South Africa is looking better, as you've just reminded us. Are you of the opinion that the country is uninvestable or still uninvestable, as Rob Hertzog suggests?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you remember the old saying in investment markets, I don't know who said it, it'll come to me now, but he said, if the facts change, you change your mind. You cannot have a rigid investment approach in the face of glaring facts that have changed everything. And things have changed in South Africa. And I know Cyril Ramaphosa is taking credit and saying it's the ANC. But first of all, I think one must commend the South African private sector for how they've managed to survive and prosper in the face of absolute draconian policy decisions from government, a very hostile political environment. Our guys have just knuckled down and they've just got on with their business, which is quite remarkable. If you drive around in South Africa and you see what the Shoprites are doing and the Checkers and the Mediclinics, they are investing in the face of a very hostile political environment. That environment is changing, and I think the ANC realized they cannot carry on thumbing their noses at the private sector. And these are the guys who've got to pay the bills and pay the taxes. So there has been a turnaround. Secondly, confidence is coming back into the people I speak to. People are actually coming back from overseas to South Africa. It hasn't fallen across the abyss. So you cannot deny these things. And any person, whether you're a fund manager or advisor, you have to say things have changed. And therefore, our strategy is changing. And our strategy at Brentis has changed a long time ago. We've been very selectively been increasing our allocation to local equities, and they've done extremely well. But our offshore stuff has done nobody's actually lost in this race. It's actually been quite remarkable. Both offshore has done extremely well, and local has done extremely well. So the final point is South Africans are starting to repair their balance sheets, which have been badly damaged. And the property market outside of the Western Cape is now starting to come alive as well because of prospects of lower interest rates. And, of course, I think residential property in the north of the country is extremely cheap when you compare it to the Western Cape. And if the DA, Helen Zille, manages to take control of Johannesburg, that will be very positive because it is a big asset. And the last point I want to make is I think this World Bank loan that was given to South African municipalities last week, very much under the radar, but that is a massive amount of money that is going to be deployed under the strict supervision of the World Bank to fix up our cities. So for the first time, I've been telling people who care to listen, property in Joburg is very, very cheap right now. If you want to speculate, I'd be buying in Johannesburg in places like Danefern or Baloo or those where rand for rand, the square meter property is half the price, if not more, than in Cape Town. And value just comes into play at some point.
I think that was an important part of my investment thesis at the time, was that the rand was significantly undervalued and remains undervalued to this day. Even at 17 to the dollar, it remains undervalued. I think, you know, if we can just invert that, I think the dollar is a massively overvalued currency. And I think that is the problem that faced offshore investors right now. The dollar is massively overvalued. The rand against other currencies is not that undervalued. I mean, I always love saying this. I went to Japan 6 years ago just before COVID. And today the rand is about 20% stronger against the yen than it was 6 years ago. So the rand is not this like currency that is always weak and just a bad currency. The other currency, the Korean won, the Japanese yen, the Aussie dollar. Over the past 10 years, the rand has flatlined against Aussie dollar. There's been no depreciation at all against Aussie dollar. So the rand isn't such a runt as people like to call it. It actually holds its own. And if you then take into account our interest rates of, say, around 10% versus other countries like Australia's interest rates of 3-4%, Japan, just about nothing, keeping your money in the country, in South Africa, in, say, a bank account, which is earning you 7-10%, or a government bond, which is earning 7-10%, you're better off than taking your money offshore and putting it into dollars, Australian or US, of the US variety, or yen, with interest rates of 2 or 3 or 0%. So on that carry, you're earning extra on top of the undervalued currency. Having said that, I mean, the point Martin has made just now is extremely valid. 4 years ago, I thought South Africa was undervalued and the rand was undervalued and interest rates were very high, so things pointed to good returns. But those returns came because of the highly perceived risk levels in this country at the time. And a lot of that risk is still there. And remember, you know, at that time, anything could have happened. We could have, you know, we could have blown out. We could have collapsed. The NC could have stolen even more money, if that's possible. So anything could have happened, which I guess just points to the type of argument we should have is not an either-or argument. It is, here's an opportunity. If your neutral weight is zero, at least allocate some to it. Or if your neutral weight is 50%, allocate 60% to it. Or whatever the case may be, is an opportunity to go overweight an undervalued asset. Would you put all your money into that? No, I wouldn't. Would I put all my money into... Where else is undervalued at the moment? I think China is very undervalued. Would I put all my money in China? I wouldn't. Although I do think that it's massively undervalued. I wouldn't put all my money in there because what happens going forward is independent of what has happened in the past. So you can't extrapolate past returns, bad ones or good ones. What happens going forward is, you know, what happens. And when there's risk out there, funny things can happen. As it happens over the past 4 years, things have turned out well in South Africa. And in fact, right now, I think we're poised for fantastic returns. I mean, given the fact that we've gone off the gray list, given the fact that our credit rating has been upgraded and still with a positive outlook, given the fact due to the commodities, platinum and gold going up so much, our budget seems to be under control, the government's deficit is under control, the debt levels are not spiraling out of control. These are all fears people had 4 years ago, and they're all moving in the right direction. And the key right now is that interest rates are 300 basis points, 3% lower than they were 4 years ago. The cost of capital for businesses is 3% lower, and that makes a massive difference to the present value of future cash flows. And that has not been reflected in the equity values to any extent yet. So I think... You know, I was optimistic 4 years ago, but risk levels were a lot higher. Today, I think risk levels are a lot lower and fundamentals are a lot better. Stocks are still cheap. So I'm very excited.